This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny Meringue.
And then I went to this movie theater. Then I made a noise like this.
Dusty Hera.
Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other.
I'm beginning to like this kid, Mike.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080.
Are you good?
The Fan.
Hour 3 on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080TheFan or Twitch.tv/1080AMTheFan, we appreciate you, love you, and we love all of you who listen very, very closely to Jeff Ross.
Hey, who's pitching for the Mariners tonight?
Everson Hancock.
Hancock.
Hmm. All right.
Hancock.
Hey, look, sometimes you misspeak. Unfortunately, mine appear to be all of the embarrassing ones.
If you were going to screw that up, I thought you would have called him Herbie Hancock. You would have gone full
Tommy Boy.
Yeah. You would have gone full Tommy Boy, but no. Oh, no.
I got to give a quick shout out to my guy, Justin Verrier, for The Ringer. He does his podcast with Wozni Lambray and Rob Mahoney. And in his intro, he talked about the annals of history yesterday. Mm. And it's recorded. It's not live. And I was like,
please tell me we're keeping that one.
They were like, the what? And he's like, yeah, you know, the annals. Annals? Yeah. I texted him like, annals of history, huh? And he goes, yeah, I was pretty pissed they made me keep that one in. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're keeping that one in, buddy.
That means your coworkers appreciate and love you. Okay?
I was like, I'm on the radio for 3 hours a day, dude. I've done much worse, trust me. But it... when you talk that much, it's just going to happen. That's just how it goes, man. It happens. You know what else happens? Apparently, the unthinkable as three favorites already in round number two.
I've had some bad runs.
Oof. Yeah.
Ride me.
Oh, God.
It has been getting touched a ton.
Good Lord.
He'll bend you over his knee and give you a good spanking.
Is this riding Baker Mayfield?
Backdoor action.
Just give it to me.
I almost wet myself.
Give it to me all day.
Mm.
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 Mm-hmm.
I have a
lot.
That is smelling your own farts.
Mm.
I have a lot.
Yeah.
Went to town on top.
What about Virginia?
Oh, yeah.
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 Virginia is a good one.
Yeah, we all have them.
It happens.
Yep.
Yep.
That's how it goes.
Yep.
When you look at this landscape, though, Boston Celtics, Cleveland Cavaliers, and...
I've got a huge one for you.
Oh. And Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah?
I thought you were going to click one more.
Nope.
No, okay. Which one of these scares you the most?
Something different in your hand. Of those teams that lost?
Yeah. Which one are you most worried for?
Cleveland.
Mm.
Injuries. Injuries.
The one you, the
Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and you have DeAndre Hunter. You have three injuries, and Indiana has experience, and they showed it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it in spades. I'm not too worried about the Boston Celtics against the Knicks. They played them really well over the course of the season. They missed 45 three-pointers last night. 45. And they lost by 3 points in overtime. I am not overly concerned about Boston, but injuries are an issue for them too, but not nearly to the level or degree that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going through. So I would say Cleveland 1, OKC 2, and then I'm putting the Boston Celtics in there.
I tend to agree with you, but for the purpose of radio, I'm going to disagree here. And there's the Cavs can get healthy, and that can be okay.
I don't know, big toe, dislocated thumb,
mm-hmm.
and ankle.
Yeah. Oof. Don't get me wrong, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But the Thunder have a problem too, and there's no answer for it. The 7-foot Serbian who went 40, 20, and 5, and there was nothing they could do with him. And it wasn't like the rest, like, wasn't like Jamal Murray went bonkers. It mm-hmm. wasn't like Michael Porter Jr. went bonkers. You didn't get the crazy good Westbrook game. Yeah, you got a lot from Christian Brown. But there's a lot of meat on the bone for that Denver Nuggets team. It was like, yeah, the Thunder coughed up a hairball. But that's also kind of what they've done in the playoffs.
Oh, they should not feel comfortable.
Look, that Mavericks team beat the hell out of them last year. And you're like, oh, yeah, they'll learn from it. They got Hartenstein. They got Alex Caruso. And I'm like, none of those solves that issue.
Mm-mm. Hartenstein helps.
Sure.
But when he gets into foul trouble early, then it is equalized.
Were you surprised by how many fouls were called last night in both games? Because there was foul trouble for both teams.
Well, Jokic had 5. Mm-hmm. Hartenstein had 5. Jalen Williams had 5. Mm-hmm. I think all three of those guys had 5 fouls last night. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, but...
And Shea and Lou Dort were both at 4.
I think that we see officiating crews do this at the beginning of playoff series where they go, all right, we're going to set the tone for this series. And then as time goes on, they let them play a little bit more and a little bit more as the series goes on. And I tend to like that a little bit more because remember what we saw in the first round? And this may be the NBA kind of pulling the reins back on
a little bit.
Because the first couple of games were physical as hell. That Denver Clippers series, they were mugging each other. Warriors Houston series, it crossed that line. Like we talked about this, like it was to the point where it's like, you want to see Draymond Green try to all his BS? Well, there's a reason why he kept doing it is because at the very beginning it was like, nope, we're going no holds barred here.
Counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Warriors Rockets game 7 was the highest rated game 7 for the NBA since 2009.
Well, yes, but that is to be expected. Steph Curry in a game 7?
Yeah, but it's still. I mean, Steph Curry's been in other game 7s.
Yeah, that I don't think the physicality played into that.
I do.
I thought it was really good basketball that was being played, too.
I think people were interested in it because...
And the fact that the Rockets punched him in the jaw at home the game before.
It certainly helps. But I look at this Thunder team and I go... Yeah, they're as great as they are. The thing that they're missing, this is what we talked about really all year. There's only so many guys that can exploit what the Thunder don't have. Nikola Jokic is literally the poster child for it. And nobody has a good answer for Jokic. That's the point. But if you can't, like if the math problem is, you know, X plus Y equals Z, and if you can't figure out the Y...
That's an issue.
The math ain't mathin'.
Yeah. Yeah. Jokic is a big one to solve. But counter to that is nobody's ever solved Nikola Jokic, mm-hmm. and they've lost playoff series. It's going to be, is Michael Porter Jr. going to be Jekyll and Hyde all series long?
I think the answer we know that is yes.
And what is his Hyde game? Because, look, it's... pretty gnarly what he's going on with his shoulder.
Oh, I mean, there was one play early in the game. I must say it was in the second quarter. Kind of a quasi uncontested rebound. And normally one that he would go up for and just go get. But he kind of waited for it and he just reached out for it with just his right hand and kept his left arm down. And Caruso comes out of nowhere and says, "Thank you," rips it from him and gets an and one. And I went, yeah. That's not a good sign.
Yeah.
Because he was very clear that it was like he thought he could just grab this one-handed, but as soon as anybody put some pressure on him, he couldn't do it because he didn't want to lift his left arm up.
Yeah, I don't think that is conducive to winning basketball.
Are you surprised he's not playing in the full like KCP crazy shoulder wrap.
I mean, if it's not popping out, then you don't want to, you don't need that.
Yeah.
And that's way too restrictive. So if it's just, if his shoulder is sliding out of socket, mm-hmm. that's different. But his is an AC joint, right?
Yes.
And so you just need to have some padding on top of that and just play through the pain. The pain is excruciating, though, with an AC joint. Because everything that's on top of your shoulder mm-hmm. and lifting your shoulder up, that hurts a ton. But the brace is just to hold it in place. It's not... That really won't help. It actually may hurt a little bit more
because
it's pressure
it.
On it.
Mm.
Yeah.
See, I defer to you on the shoulders because that's the one thing on me. It's still okay.
Shoulders suck, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not fun, especially playing basketball.
Yeah, I would imagine. There's a lot, for those that are like, always say, like, oh, basketball is a soft sport. Go watch an NBA game up close and watch how physical it is.
A lot of physicality.
It's wild how tough it gets down there. But well, why don't we pivot to the sport that everybody calls the most physical out there in the world of college football, as there is not news. Well, I guess it is news, but it's just no news for the Oregon Ducks as they miss out on one of the top prospects in the country and kind of what that means for the Ducks going forward as they're putting their 2026 class together. We'll do that next here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. While we're in the throes of the NBA playoffs and the NBA draft rapidly approaching, football never sleeps, and the college football recruiting cycle definitely doesn't sleep. Some considered to be the number one prospect in the country, has made a decision. He has opted to go to the Georgia Bulldogs, a quarterback that the Oregon Ducks were after pretty hard after, he opened up his, commitment. But five-star quarterback Jared Curtis, after reopening, after being committed originally to Georgia, opening back up, has recommitted back to Georgia and staying closer to home.
Yeah, and this was something that he wanted to take a look at what else was out there. Mm-hmm. And he's number one quarterback recruit in the country. He's out of Nashville, Tennessee. And so it came down to Oregon and Georgia. And he said, like, it was a tough decision, but ultimately wanted to stick with Georgia, the place that he'd originally committed to. Sounded like his family was on board with Georgia because it's closer to home. Mm-hmm. And going from Nashville to Athens, heck of a lot easier than Nashville to Eugene. But it also is, look, Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs are still a national power.
Mm-hmm.
This is the number one quarterback recruit in the country. And these are guys that Oregon hadn't been sniffing before. Mm-hmm. And you are in those homes and you're getting their attention and come down to it. But it is a blow when you are considered to be one of the favorites to land Curtis. Where I think that it's even more a little bit pressing is that Jackson Cantwell, the number one recruit in the country, the left tackle, is close with Jared Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackson Cantwell is going to Georgia for a visit this weekend and will be making his announcement on Monday. Where that is, it gets a little bit dicey, is that Curtis was like, I'm going to Georgia and I'm going to be recruiting for Georgia mm-hmm. starting right now, but I'm going to try to make sure we get Jackson Cantwell as well. Doesn't mean that Oregon's out on Cantwell. He's not just the number one offensive tackle. He is one of the best discus and shot putters in the country. Mm-hmm. And his father actually had a lot of success in Hayward Field when he was an athlete as a discus thrower. And so the allure of being a two-sport athlete at Oregon, where it's not just the football program, but the track and field is elite as well. Georgia has a great track program as well. But, you know, there is that hook is, hey, if you can close on Curtis, then you have a better shot to get Jackson Cantwell. You could still get Cantwell. It makes it a little bit harder. But as it pertains to Oregon landing a quarterback, now you already have Ryder Lyons, who is the number three quarterback mm-hmm. in the class of 2026. He's already been projected to be an Oregon commit. It was down to those two guys for a really long time. It was whichever one. If Curtis goes to Oregon, Lyons is going to go to somewhere else. Now it's projected that Ryder Lyons is going to be coming to Oregon. He's going to be taking a Mormon mission.
So he's gone for 2 years.
He's gone for 2 years. He'd be back, I think,
class of 27-ish.
Yeah. But you want to get a quarterback recruit in every single class. That's why the Oregon quarterback room is not going to fall apart
No.
But it's always good to have the number one quarterback in the country. You have Dante Moore, Austin Novosad. Look, this is all four now because of the transfer portal, and anytime any guy can leave. But Akili Smith Jr. is in that quarterback room as an incoming freshman. Luke Moga is a redshirt freshman who flashed a few things in the spring game that people were excited about. You always want to get one quarterback in each recruiting class you have moving forward. And to get the nation's number three quarterback, you're feeling okay about that.
Yeah.
So,
in Oregon's recruiting class right now, it's, you know, ranked somewhere around 19 to 21.
Yeah.
It's not because of bad recruits. It's that they only have seven guys on the books right now. Where the school's all at the top, it is not just sheer numbers. It's high rated recruits, but USC is number one, but they have 27 commits.
They have 27 commits, and like this is kind of what you can kind of look at is if you go through the portal, right, and you go through and you can fill spots via the portal as well, you look at the quality of recruit that you have coming in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And 24/7 does a really good job of this where they go and they have like an average of your player grading. Oregon may be 21st just because they have seven commits. They are fourth nationally in the quality of talent that is committed. Recruiting isn't backsliding. You're losing some guys. And look, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And like, this is the whole thing. Everybody has said Oregon's NIL, they just pay and they get players. The data of NIL that is put forth and it's public. Oregon is not the biggest spender on their roster, okay? Relationships and recruiting matter. Mm-hmm. Other teams have gotten their S together, too. USC is a prime example of that, is that they've had money. No, they've actually honed in their recruiting process a hell of a lot better.
They got rid of, I believe it's three unauthorized, or not unauthorized, but collectives that were just kind of out running about. And I hate giving them credit, but USC stole Notre Dame's GM.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it has been a rapid momentum push.
Having your recruiting pulling in the same direction,
which Oregon has been
pointed
maybe
direction,
the best at. As far as like getting into it early, they were on it before everyone else.
We've also talked about this, like the moment that Jed Fish was hired at Washington, I said Jed Fish is going to turn that around. It's not going to be year one. They are doing the same thing.
We saw it in Arizona.
This is what happens when you put good coaches in places, and there is more competition now. And you have to continue to be the grinders. You still have to stay on top of it. But the ridiculous nature of the way recruiting is, and the fact that people are just going to go, oh, well, NIL now, huh? Well, it's always been a relationship business, and that's the way it always will be. And Jared Curtis going to Oregon or going to Georgia. Look, remember when Dante Moore spurned Oregon and went to UCLA?
Mm-hmm. And then where did he come back to?
He's at Oregon.
Mm.
He's at Oregon. Well, so that's the weird thing about this recruiting is like, dang, there's a lot of time to go as well in this whole recruiting process where, like, who's to say that the seven commits that Oregon has right now aren't going to be decommitting and going somewhere else, and they're going to go and they're going to pluck a commitment from some other program. So it's a really interesting situation. And Curtis originally had committed to Georgia. He reopened his recruitment and now ends up going back to Georgia and recommitting, and it may have a massive ripple effect in the world of recruiting based on what Jackson Cantwell decides to do.
Well, keeping it in state, Oregon State had a commit in Lake Oswego running back. What was his first name?
LaMarcus Bell.
Who I believe is the highest rated recruit in the state right now.
He's one of them. He's one of the top rising recruits in the state and in the region.
Yeah, ran a sub-11 100-meter dash, high-level athlete. He was originally committed to Oregon State, but said he was going to reopen his commitment. But he was still very much interested in checking out Oregon State and taking his official visit. Well, the Beavers have removed that option for him.
I don't like this for Oregon
State. This is... I get the whole drawing the line in the sand kind of deal, But I don't think you're in the position to do that.
Well, it's not. It's just historically it tells you it doesn't work out well for you. Yeah. Because that used to be kind of it's the old school way of recruiting. It's like if you're committed to us, you're committed to us. And if you reopen your recruitment, then we don't want anything with you. A lot of schools have done this and a lot of schools have missed in the recruiting cycle. Mm-hmm. Take Georgia, for example. We just got done talking about Jared Curtis. Mm-hmm. He was committed to Georgia, then reopened his recruitment. And granted, his profile's a little bit different as the number one quarterback in the country. But Georgia wasn't like, no, once you're committed and you're going to stick with us. He reopened his commitment and guess what he realized? No, the place that I committed to is the place that I wanted to go.
That to me sounds like the way, look, I get the mentality of the old school recruiting. Like if you're with us, you're with us. If you're not like it, but it's also kind of Star Warsian and like the whole like Sith and dealing in absolutes. Nothing in this world is an absolute, and trying to paint it as such black and white to try to simplify the process, if you take a step and just think about it for a second, if a guy goes and opens his recruitment and goes somewhere else, did you really want that guy to begin with? And maybe that sounds like, oh, you're just trying to do that and make yourself feel better. But it's like, no, don't you want guys who want to be there?
Yep.
And if they go out and they, you know, they see the grass isn't greener somewhere else and they go, you know what, man, I do want to be here. At bare minimum, it reinforces that you are the right space for them.
This is another similarity to the Curtis situation, is that LaMarcus Bell told Andrew Nemec that his mom wanted him to stay close to home, but she told me if I wanted to go out and explore, she wants me to do that and be successful. That Curtis's parents wanted him to stay close to home. And he committed to Georgia. Well, he recommitted to Georgia and he is going to be staying closer to home. You know, you obviously know LaMarcus Bell's mom wants him to stay close to home. He told Nemec that, right? And so now you're looking at his options and the places that he's going to plan visits to: Boise State, BYU, Utah, and San Diego State.
So this guy might end up, you know, playing against you instead.
And there are, well, yeah, for two of those schools, for Boise State and San Diego State, in the Pac-12. But if the fear was that, all right, this kid's recruitment has taken off to a point where we don't think we're going to be able to hang on to him, and his profile may have gotten too big, maybe you draw that line in the sand and you say, no, we're saying no now because we know the allure of the Big 12 going to Utah or going to BYU, maybe too much for him to stick with the commitment. And then you're playing chess in this whole thing where you have a rallying cry for your fan base that Trent Bray, in the way that they handle their recruiting process, is you're either with us or you're not. And you also rip that Band-Aid that could sting if he were to say, if you do stay in this hunt and you lose him to just playing in the Big 12, which is a higher caliber of football.
Yeah, it just is.
They've got it. They have a seat at the table for the college football playoff. Now, I think Boise State taught everybody a very valuable lesson that you cannot just have a seat at the table, but get a first round bye if you have a damn good football team.
And the whole idea
and there, really good running back, which is what LaMarcus Bell is.
The whole idea there of it being too afraid to get hurt, I hope that's not the situation. Because that, to me, feels like operating from a point of weakness.
Yeah. And
not a position of strength.
And that's not what I think is happening. I'm just saying that could be part of the strategy here is that, look, this kid is vaulting up boards. And I saw him play a couple times last year at LO. He's pretty damn special. He's a really dynamic running back, and it's going to be attractive to a lot of teams, especially if he keeps getting that 100-meter time down. He wants to run a 10.6, according to Nemec. That's blazing. So anytime you get under 11, you're fast. You are very fast. And that also attracts bigger schools and bigger names come calling for you.
But you also, if you're Oregon State, obviously this is before the teardown of the Pac-12.
Yep.
But you went down and you saw a quarterback in California that ended up blossoming into a near five-star caliber quarterback in the recruiting cycle. Yes, he leaves and goes to Michigan State with Jonathan Smith, but you stayed through it. And even though he was looking at other places, guess mm-hmm. where he ended up?
Oregon State.
So it's like, I understand the profiles are different now, but it's like...
Yeah, this is a tough one because it splits the fan base in that, no, you want to stay in the hunt mm-hmm. for a guy who's talented in your own backyard. And look, there's... I know a lot of high school coaches. Steve Corey is not like a cut of this cloth, mm-hmm. I don't think, at Lake Oswego. But there's a lot of coaches that will see that and be like,
what the hell?
This guy's in state. You should do whatever you can to try to hold on to him. Now, you know, Coach Corey, he's a Beaver himself. Mm-hmm. He's a record-setting player at Oregon State. And he's one of the best damn coaches and people around. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's definitely not going to be a guy who's like, Oregon State's dead to me. But there's other coaches in the area that they kind of take a peek at it and they go, huh.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the best players in the state and in the region mm-hmm. at his position. And they're saying, no, we don't want you anymore just because a kid wants to see what other opportunities are out there. It can be split both ways. But there also are a lot of Oregon State fans that are like, hell yeah, Coach Bray, draw a line in the sand and stick to it.
It's going to be interesting to see this all shakes out and where Bell ends up. Coming up next, though, we've got to delve into it. We have two very stupid stories, one in college football and one in basketball that we just have to hit. And there's no way to set it up. It's just, it's all very dumb. And why the hell are we doing this? But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports and Update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
All right, what part is stupid you want to start with? You want to go with Colorado or you want to go with the NBA?
Oh, boy. Colorado stupid. Let's go Colorado stupid. Final answer.
An anonymous Colorado fan is suing the NFL for emotional distress because of the Shedeur Sanders situation.
Come again?
Yeah.
I look at this as actually a positive for Colorado football. It means you have
somebody cares.
You have legitimate football fans now. Mm. They are emotionally distraught over Shedeur Sanders' slide in the NFL draft. There's nobody else to blame. Except for the NFL. Mm. We're going to sue for $100 million.
You know what I love about this? This feels like it's right. Do you follow message board geniuses?
No.
It's a Twitter account that just has screenshots from all of like the SEC and Big Ten message boards and forums. And it's some of the most reprehensibly stupid things you have ever seen in your entire life. Like it's like a bottom school in the SEC is like, man, if we could just get Lane Kiffin to come coach us, we'd be a national title contender. It's just coaching. It's coaching's the problem.
Well, it can't be your school.
No,
it can't be your funding. It can't be anything else.
It has to be something outside of your control.
Exactly. And that's exactly why this lawsuit is here. And I'm here for it. Mm. I'm here for this level of frivolous lawsuit that will never see a court. And should be thrown out, and rightfully so, because this person is an idiot.
The affidavit is great. This comes straight from the court document. A retraction of the slanderous statements made about Shedeur Sanders, along with an apology for any harm caused to his reputation, an implementation of fair practices in the drafting process to ensure that talented players are recognized and given opportunities based on merit, and punitive damages in the amount of $100 million for the harm caused to the plaintiff, impact the NFL's actions, and his emotional well-being.
Who's filing this lawsuit?
It's a John Doe. And hilariously, the first comment...
Dude, this better be...
At the bottom?
Yeah.
Message board geniuses.
Yeah. This better be like a Nebraska fan or... Golly, who are even their rivals anymore? Do they have a legitimate Big 12 rival? A Big 12 foe?
It's probably Nebraska still.
They tried the Colorado thing in the Pac-12, or the Utah thing in the Pac-12 with Utah-Colorado, and it just never felt right.
Well, when you get smacked.
Well, yeah, that never helps a rival. No. It actually does help a rival. Well,
it can build it up when you do get over the hump, but I think if you're holding true to it, it's Colorado, Nebraska. And I think you have a potential if Colorado does end up staying relevant and decent.
Yeah.
Arizona State. I could see that.
Do you think it could be Colorado State who's doing this? There's a lot of bad blood after the last couple of seasons.
Nikolai Fowler, he's a hyphenated last name, the quarterback for Colorado State.
Yeah.
Remember, he was the one that just kept killing them the year before with the drag concepts, the mesh concepts over and over again. Fowler Morosi.
I think this may be a Colorado State fan, could be a Nebraska fan, just trolling right now because it's filed under John Doe.
Yeah.
Because even they knew, whoever filed this knew how stupid this is.
I hope it's like a lawyer.
Congrats on the level of dumb, though.
Yeah.
Either that or it's Shadur himself.
That, if it came back and it was like Shiloh. Or Deion Jr. is the social media one, right?
Deion Jr., yeah. This is something that people have not discussed, though. What is the power ranking of Deion's kids now?
Oh, yeah, I mean, fifth round pick, falling down the board.
But then Shiloh...
undrafted.
Well, he went on that stream and said maybe dad's advice wasn't the best.
Got signed an agent. Shiloh, you know, at the bottom, Deion Jr. back on top.
Like, who knows what the power rankings are right now? I mean, this could be the most intriguing aspect of the entire fallout of Shadur is he still leading the kids' power rankings? I bet it's just Deion Jr. now.
That's tough.
Putting out that content.
Don't like that. Tell you what, this is another thing I don't like. I don't like this at all. I think it's nasty. I think it's gross. And, you know, I hope that whoever signed this deal is getting the requisite finances for it, but I do not like it. NBC has announced that Jim Fagan, who was the voice of the NBA and NBC's promos during the 90s, will again voice those promos for NBA on NBC, except for Jim Fagan passed in 2019. So they are going to utilize AI to do this.
Yeah, we have it.
Oh, God.
You ready?
Yeah.
This is these are people. Yeah. Hey, those are minions. Makes me want to do this.
That's John Tesh playing right there.
This fall, the NBA is coming home to NBC and streaming on Peacock.
John Tesh still got it.
I don't like that. It weirds me out. If you haven't seen this ad, they played this ad the first time on Saturday or Sunday. It must have been for the opening round of round two, so it must have been Saturday. And it was very cool because that last scene, right before you hear Tracy Morgan and Jim Fagan, is actually John Tesh center court at Intuit Dome on the keyboards.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. And when I heard that voice, it didn't register to me because, like John Tesh in that Round Ball Rock, that voice is synonymous with that. But when I saw this, I was like, oh,
boy,
I don't like that one bit. You remember, this led to part of the writer's strike with the SAG after stuff.
Yeah, because studios were putting it into
contracts
of actors that we can use your voice and your likeness for AI in the future. And it was like, the hell you can. Yeah.
And it was a big, big sticking point. It's nasty, man. I don't like it.
As long as they got his family's permission and they're getting a little bit of kickback, I'm okay with it. It doesn't sound bad, but it also doesn't sound real.
I mean, they're partners with Amazon in this, and I'm sure the technology they're using for this is probably cutting edge AI voice technology.
Well, what's next? Are we going to use AI to bring back Don Pardo for Saturday Night Live?
I mean, I'd be for it.
Look,
it's Saturday Night Live.
Maybe Rod Roddy for The Price is Right.
Ramblin' Rod, baby. Bring back the, you know, animatus corpse for the Ramblin' Rod show.
Well, maybe not like the going full hologram Tupac, but just using the voice.
So,
you know,
this is the Pandora's box of it all. This is actually a discussion in the NBA as it pertains to scouting. And the idea that you could, with the and teams are investing in this. This is happening. That you can input not just box scores, but tracking data and everything else. And you can use previous models of players and use it as a projection tool. And I'm like, that kind of takes the scout's eye and mind and the human element out of this.
Now, the human element has always got to be a part of anything that we do in the world of media or acting, because emotion is a lot.
Yeah.
And human connection means a ton.
And that's where this all gets so weird.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
So, all right, coming up next, we're going to wrap up today's show. We have the last game one for the Western Conference getting underway in round number two. The Warriors, can they pull the upset and make it a 4-0 sweep for the opening game and the underdogs? Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Blowing out your watch. Game one between the Warriors and Timberwolves. We get to reignite the Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert feud.
Oh, they like each other so much.
Oh, they're so much.
It's going to be great.
It's great, great grand old times. Coming into the game, the Minnesota Timberwolves are 6.5-point favorites.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Why? Mm-hmm. 6.5 seems like a big line.
Also tonight, game two of Cavs Pacers, the Cavs are 7.5-point favorites, which I went, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
That tells me Evan Mobley's going to play. That's
well,
says.
And DeAndre Hunter and Darius Garland, they said
they're shutting him down for a week.
Could be it'd be a couple weeks during the regular season, but they think that he could be back after a week. And like, I don't, so he's going to be back when they head to Indiana.
Yeah.
Yikes, man.
But you look at this
7.5
Warriors Timberwolves series.
That's tasty.
Yeah, that seems like an awful big line, but in the same token, what was the thing that really the Warriors struggled with against the Rockets? It was the two big lineup with Alperen Şengün and Steven Adams. Timberwolves, big team.
Rudy Gobert, yeah. Very big. Yeah.
Naz Reid,
yeah, very
pretty
big.
Jaden McDaniels, mm-hmm. Pretty big.
Yeah, even Julius Randle, who's a small big, is a big.
Big. Like, who do the Warriors have to deal with those guys? It's like Draymond and Looney, and then after that, you're like going, oh, crap.
Yeah. But
you're going to bust out Trayce Jackson-Davis again?
And Edwards is going to be interesting in this series, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
You're going to put pods on him?
Good luck. Good luck with that. But does he kind of do the takeover where Ant Edwards can... take over games, but he can also try to a detriment of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I think he's figuring it out.
I hope he is.
Because he is truly great.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at this and I go, of all the series matchups, this is the one that would surprise me the most, is if the Warriors grab this game.
Yeah.
When you're talking about styles make fights, the style leans significantly in favor of the Timberwolves.
Ooh, I'm here for it.
But so Timberwolves tonight, I'm taking. I think the Cavs get back on track tonight. I don't think the Pacers can play that good again.
Maybe.
It's not impossible, but they were incredible. And I'm not saying that to take away from the Pacers. They were incredible in game one.
Yeah.
They didn't miss a beat.
All right. Well, it is tonight. We've got 4 o'clock. Well, I guess this afternoon in an hour. Pacers at the Cavs on TNT, and then 6:30, you've got the Warriors heading to Minnesota. A Golden State win means all 4 road teams would win game one of the conference semifinals.
8:30 local tip-off.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. That's how it goes.
I don't know. Usually play at like 9:45 on normal TNT Jeez. Nights. All right, that'll do it for us on a Tuesday. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's Primetime with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye. All you've got is like this thing, like reaching up underneath you, kind of cupping you.
Well, that's talking screws.